hardwired to read faces. I mean, it is, evidence is overwhelming. We are hardwired to read faces. And that nonverbal communication is indispensable when you're forming a tight-knit. And when I say tight-knit, I mean, I don't mean a group of people who like the same things. I mean, imagine you were going to come under a cap at some point.
A group that works well together.
A group that works well together that will rely on each other in times of distress, which are thankfully quite infrequent in our lives. It may become a moot point, but at the same time, we have an instinctive need for being this thing. We do have a need for human interaction. If you deny human interaction, you'll be twitching.
There's the issue of group cohesion as well. I would argue the point that it's a lot easier to leave or break and make bonds online with online communities than it is to... Perhaps it's easier to make bonds, perhaps not, in physical reality, but I think it's a lot more difficult to leave an actual physical community than it is to just say, leave group, yes, no, confirm.
There are chemical processes, too, that occur with physical interaction, face-to-face interaction, and I think in terms of what you're talking about, with when humans are in distress, you know, in terms of people you can rely on and trust or communities you can go to, and I think distress isn't just, you know, the threat of military attack.
But I wonder what's going to happen when we get further in gestural interfaces, when how you talk with your hands is communicated, how you talk with your fate, all your nonverbal stuff is translated, and if there will come a point when even the things that you're not typing in are still being conveyed. So if you're having a really crappy day and you go to
including the chemicals?
Including the chemicals.
About, like, pheromones, but physical proximity, just the closeness of bodies.
Yeah, but I mean, if you are
there is lots of evidence for other non-discovered forms of nonverbal communication.
And
like, there's lots of evidence for those things. We just don't know what they are.
And so if you're able to convey those in a forum, if you go to your forum because you're having a bad day and you just want to have conversation, but you don't want to let people know that you just had the worst day ever, will there come a point when you don't have a choice? They're going to know that you've had a bad day.
It's just choose a different, you know, mode of communication.
Right.
I think there's two things happening. One, and I think it's valid, I think it's a legitimate point that Addie's making. There are a whole lot of complex things that happen in communication. When we start cutting those out, we don't really know what that does to us on very subtle and complex levels. On the other hand, though, there are new ways of communicating that there weren't before. There's a lady at Carnegie Mellon who just developed a way for people to see their conversations graphically in real time as they're having them, in such a way that it gives all the participants in the conversation more information about what is actually happening in the conversation than they have about this. Now,
yeah, you only remember 40% of what you hear.
There's potential for new interfaces to radically change how we communicate anyway. But I'm just saying, I think that both are legitimate issues, and I don't think they're mutually exclusive.
No, I think it's largely an additive issue too. I mean, these things will add on to each other. I don't think they're necessarily detracting from one another. I mean, does anyone here notice that they've lost the ability to communicate face to face that they previously had by using a lot of internet?
Actually, when I do a lot of coding, and when I do all the time, when I spend most of my Saturdays, editing the audio, posting it, planning the next meeting, doing all the cross-linking, and then maybe do some Java studying, I can't talk to people. I'm like,
is that any different than somebody who spent a day in a blacksmith shop going to the pub afterwards?
She's in her zone.
Feeling
yeah.
It's definitely no different than someone who... You work in a blacksmith shop?
No. It was a cobbler shop, but I think it's similar. I think I really wanted to say is that there's a difference between also verbal communication communication and types of communication. We're not just losing non-verbal, we're losing verbal. There's a cadence to speech, there's rhythms, there's overtones, there's...
I'm losing sarcasm.
And there's pauses and buts and half-finished sentences. There's a whole melee of just...
That's why I like people that type the way they speak.
Yes.
But at the same time, communicating online is fiction. You're using the same tools that fiction writers use to convey their point. You're using the same...
Which are the same tools that nonfiction writers use?
But,
what is your point there?
But face-to-face conversation is the same tool that playwriters would use to present their story.
Or con artists.
Or con artists.
I don't know. I don't know if I...
It's up to the reader to extrapolate the emotion.
Everything's a presentation.
Example. Yeah. Right.
I think one of the things we may have to rethink is our social etiquette online, because we don't have that nonverbal communication. So I can go like this to Willow, and she knows that I appreciate her being here, but I wouldn't like send her an email saying, I really appreciated you facilitating the H plus discussion group, like, or Matt, like I wouldn't send him an email when he goes back to Indiana and say, hey, that was really awesome and you're really great. Like, I just wouldn't do that because that would be a little bit weird.
I just did something like that today. I'm in a group that meets like for a writing seminar.
And that's great, but I think we should rethink those types of things, those nonverbal communications that we otherwise don't get when we're only communicating online.
And I was wondering, I actually had that thought, like, she's going to think this is weird. I sent her an email just to thank her for sending out a group email. But it was an attempt to facilitate conversation when we see each other again face to face.
Right. But there are those really subtle things that you do, like just a smile or just a nod that you wouldn't send an email about?
That's what emoticons are for.
No, lost in digital translation.
Yeah.
I guess another question that's very interesting to this, though, is how does the rules that a community puts forward affect the development of that community? This particular community, for example, for speaking, we have a very, whoever is willing to jump forward and talk. There's another community that I belong to where the youngest or newest member of the community always must speak first, with the idea of not of challenging the thoughts of those who have been in the community the longest with new ideas. But what types of things in the H plus community or what rules affect the way that we interact as a community?
Face to face or online or both?
Either.
Something that I do is I try to keep people on track, but also there are a lot of people here that do step forward, but I try to make eye contact with everyone. I've kind of been missing you guys, I'm sorry, but Helene doesn't really jump into it. And so I'll wait and I'll be like, go! And so there, I think it's a combination of people being willing to jump forward and also I think we're all pretty tuned into each other and kind of notice who's going to, you notice that Brian had something to say. So you're like, hey, Brian, you have to.
It can be poison too, though. I've been to past H plus meetings, nobody here, where like Willow was like, okay, you're really off topic, let's get back into something else, and they're like, oh, but, and then they keep going on with what they were going on before.
Can I put a qualifier on that line of inquiry? For the sake of discussion,
right.
How has that changed by transhumanist technologies? I mean, I'm just saying, how is that appropriate?
And the interesting,
because I think that
one really interesting technology that does not exist that I've heard that people, someone has suggested to me is that when you're on an email discussion list and someone has gone way off topic and they're like clearly trolling, you just hit a button that says go outside and they don't get any message, but everyone else in the group gets a message that says, this person's been told to go outside. If you want to join them, you can click this button and you'll still be included in this email thread, but otherwise you're not going to see anything else about it. And as long as they don't change the subject line, then you're good.
Interesting.
That's kind of like
intrusive. You know what? You're being really obnoxious. We'd like you to.
But people don't.
Do it.
Some people do not respond to that.
I would agree, and I think Matt was kind of saying the same thing earlier about breaking connections being easier online because there's less commitment.
Well, but when you have to like start a whole new email list to like this one person.
At the same time, typically in real life, flame wars don't happen.
No.
They're much less prevalent.
It's just a fight.
Oh, you're talking about as opposed to email lists or
as opposed to any online communication, for the simple fact that, one, I have to look you in the eye tell you something that you may not want to hear, that it might hurt your feelings. I have to be in the same room with you after I'm done saying it, and you have friends around you who are going to ostracize me for being an idiot. Whereas online, the ease of connection and disconnection has created this bizarre little thing, the internet troll, that has no prior... It's like a mimetic virus that just kind of spread around unexpectedly just because of the tools available.
Right, and that goes back to what we were saying about tolerance, that you really have to behave when you're in smaller communities and you're forced to live with these people.
And as communication gets... Sorry.
There's another dimension that has less to do with being human and a little more with just the time dimension.
Yeah.
The internet has no talking stick, and there's a great self-policer in having to wait a little while before you say a thing. And if everybody can talk at once on top of each other, and it's a mass of sort of simultaneously produced speech, you don't have that sort of, well, three people speak before me, and by that time I think better of what it was that was in my head that was going to come out of my mouth.
Although, I would say the other side of that for me personally is that because a lot of the conversations I have online are half duplex conversations, I do have, like, somebody will say something and I'll have time to think about it and get back to them, and I can craft a few paragraphs about what I want to say.
Yeah.
Rather than go, I don't know what I think about that.
But I love the asynchronous when you want it to be communication, but that it's also okay to just leave an email for 3 days. It's okay, or you can respond right then. And I think that allows people to really fine-tune their responses. But I've also noticed that the effect in meet space is that I am not always as clever as people think I am, because I don't have the time to think about what I'm going to say. It's one thing that I really learned from Matt when we both lived in Bloomington was to make everything I say count, and that sometimes people are going to have to wait a few seconds to hear what I'm going to say, because I'm not just filling the gap until I reach that point. I'm not just spewing verbiage in order to keep their attention.
Right.
That's funny, because I've had kind of the opposite problem. I get along with people a lot more readily when I meet them in real life than I ever do. And it's not, there's something missing from communication online that I notice. For example, I met up with one of the ladies who runs Coil House, which everyone should read because it's awesome. Coilhouse.net? Yeah, it's great. I met up with her, and I've been commenting on this site for years, since it started. And because it's a comment thread, it's more like you just shoot these little comments off into the dark, and occasionally someone goes, LOL, and you don't get any idea if what you're saying is being viewed as obnoxious, or if anyone's sitting there behind the computer going, oh, what's he saying? It turned out that I was quite liked on the site, and that people there were like, yeah, why don't you come write for us? And I had no idea, and if I had never met them in real life, I would never have learned this. I would never have dreamed of, you know, presenting this thing.
If you would have met them, say, with a webcam and voice talking, do you think you could have got a similar type of thing? Because, I mean, I hear this online, and it seems like we're talking online is just form, it's like just form communication, but online has the potential, and is broadband delivery itself, has the potential to be with face-to-face talking. I mean,
Webcam is not face-to-face. You never look a webcam in the eye. It's always like off from there. I've seen like webcam forum type things or chat room webcam things, and there's always this huge separation of what's going on in the chat box and all the windows.
I know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Well, an important point to make.
Go ahead.
An important point to make is that just a bandwidth issue?
Yeah, and time delay. The thing that I think it was Ariana that was talking about this on Whitechapel was that you don't, the same reason you don't use video phone, you don't want to use a webcam because you have to, you know, get dressed up and you have to sit there. And so often we use it to show people what we're doing, not how we're saying it. So it's much more of a, I'm going to take a picture of this to send to you so you can see what's going on. I'm not going to be like, this is me happy about what we're talking about, you know. It's just kind of weird.
Kind of tight Twitter-like look on that face for the most part.
Yeah, start to drool a little
bit. But I think that as we develop, take Second Life, for example, which does have the potential for people to have real-time, complex conversations. Now, it's missing a lot of the complexity of physical sort of conversation with this, but potentially, if we all had avatars that reflected our actual current emotive state, et cetera, and they were all interacting in virtual space, you can extrapolate that all the way out to let's all meet on the holodeck, where it looks exactly like we're all sitting here at the table right now, but we're not. We're really sitting in our homes.
It doesn't surprise me.
Well, I guess it just comes down to that. There's things to be lost and gained in real time versus whatever the other one is. I don't know.
Delayed time.
Well, let's extrapolate some of those ideas a couple iterations into the future here. It's happening right now, as sure everyone here is aware, of the ability to, for instance, have information projected into meat space from the internet. Just directly, everyone walking around with a cute little button tag that looks like one of the Space Invader guys that's moving around. Aren't we making something of an artificial distinction at this point with the technology that it's at here between internet and real life?
That makes sense.
I just see that in 10, 15, 20 years, that distinction's just not going to be there. I mean, we don't make a distinction between phone life and real life. The phone is just a tool to call somebody you want to get in touch with.
There's a big distinction when you're in a long distance relationship.
Right.
You would make a distinction between having a phone conversation and having a person.
Right.
Sure. But it's a matter of degree and not a matter of something categorically different.
I think one of the things that technology or online space can really add that is not currently in meat space is instant feedback about your interactions. You can easily have a script running in the background that shows how many characters each individual has contributed to a discussion, or you can have a video reflection of what you're doing. And when people get that instant feedback about their own actions, they start to change their behavior or act in different ways. And I think that self-awareness may change the way people fundamentally are in that online technological feedback community.
I just want to add on to that with a thought experiment, because I want to see if the mechanization of, say, a video phone fundamentally changes things in a different way than just changing physical space. Imagine you're across the canyon from somebody, and you both have binoculars and megaphones. And you can see each other, and you can hear each other, but there's no little picture of them and hearing the audio that you know is from halfway across the country. Is it different? Is it just space that we're dealing with?
It seems to be a social construct, where that goes is going to depend on how quickly and how readily people adopt it. To this day, my father refuses to believe that anyone he meets online is real. He cannot make the conceptual jump from seeing a group of words online to meeting a real person with face and life and memories and so on and so forth.
You don't exist.
Yeah, but I mean, that's something that you know, our children.
But that's not that much of a leap. You have no evidence to prove that they're real. Like, I've seen forum bots that are really advanced.
Oh, yeah.
And so, you have no proof that those people are real.
I think there's also an element of intimacy going on. If I'm holding a phone right here, like, not everyone can hear me and see what I'm saying. If I'm shouting across a canyon, everybody can hear me. So, the conversation that I would have is very different.
That's one thing that, going back to Twitter, sorry, what drives me nuts when people have conversations with someone else over Twitter. Like, why don't you just direct message each other?
Right.
Why are you doing this in public space?
Yeah, it's an attention thing.
It drives me nuts.
Oh, I think it's an ignorance of attention deficit.
A lot of Gen X does not get
information overload. They want as much information as they can get because they like just discovered Twitter and they only have two friends. And so they just have reply conversations, and you're like, fuck you. Shut the fuck up. They don't know what they're doing.
Well, I don't
know. They don't,
know
that they're inconveniencing
that
everyone
reason,
on their list.
Are
people
you
do that on newsletter.
Just a little.
It went away. Damn it. Never mind.
See, I think one of the upsides to real-time communication is the way that you get inspired is way different. It's way different when you're like just having a conversation. When you're doing a forum post, for example, it's much more, it seems a lot more mechanical and not spontaneous. And it's like all the information's out there and you have to track it down. Whereas when you're in real time, it's like it can just come randomly. I know that's an irrelevant point, but I did want to say something else, which is that I've noticed that even these technologies are fairly new, in that even people that are 10 years younger or 7 years younger, they use them way different. And you can just see that by going on MySpace and looking at younger people's MySpace things versus older people. I've talked to a few people that I've met online who are younger, and they use like Skype, they just use it seamlessly, and they always want the voice talk. They don't, and it's just, it's like you're there with the brother. And
there's a generational gap inside the technology.
Yeah,
so.
And it's really small generational gap. It's like 5 years. Mm-hmm. And I think it's gonna, it seems like the comfortableness is really dependent on what happens when you're pretty young.
Well, that's one thing I was going to say after the comment about parallels and stuff like that is, what about just our ability to adapt? Like, I mean, how much of that is just going to be thrown out the window as we just very rapidly assimilate this stuff and move on to the next cool thing?
Elvin Talk for Future Shock.
I think one of our biggest adaptations is going to become evolutionarily advantageous to be in over our heads and eat that in.
Well, a perfect example, Wernicke's region of the brain is a very recent development that exists only because of written language. We adapt very quickly. I mean, this is what, only 7,000-8,000 years old, an entirely new region in the brain, meat that is adapted to eating. Now, I mean, we of course have no real predictive power, but
it could just be that happens to the region that always gets used.
Sure. It's pretty strongly shown.
No, it did.
It was
the fact that it was
selected.
So exercise made it.
Yeah, exactly. It became highly selective.
My question along those lines, and kind of, because we're so good at adapting, but because we have this communal archive of what we've done in our past, but we're expected to change all the time. I wonder, okay, so kind of a tangent. American History X reminded me that people can change overnight. You know how there's the kid who's really racist and his brother comes home and teaches him that it's bad to be that way in a night, and he goes to school the next day and everyone is expecting him to still behave in a way that he's behaved the past several years. but he has changed in a few hours.
That does not happen. I mean, we can philosophize that all the time, but that's a movie, and that never
happens. No, I think it can happen. I think it
happens. No, no, no. You see it happen. Doesn't mean it did happen. You know what I mean?
Like if you see the continued result, like if you see somebody and they're one way, and then you see them over the next 10 years.
Yeah, but it goes back and forth. Like you'll change for a little while, then go back.
So you don't think people can fundamentally change?
It's never a complete change. It's always like a weird. It's always like a back and forth of that. No, that's the nature of psychology. Like, no one changes overnight. It takes time and it takes work.
And you get the diagnosis.
Yeah.
What? What about 3 hours after you get the diagnosis that you have cancer?
And you can't suddenly become less ignorant than you were before. You can't forget
what?
Knowledge that you suddenly knew.
Wait, no, no.
Become less ignorant or more ignorant?
Well, like if you gain a new piece of knowledge, you can't, and that fundamentally changes you. You can't get rid of that piece of knowledge.
Right.
And I mean,
right, but that's what you know is not necessarily who you are.
Right, but I think
greatly defines who you are.
No, it doesn't define who you are, it affects who you are.
It's a very extreme example, but if you get a brain injury, it completely changes your personality. And I know that's not the same as assimilating a new piece of information consciously, but I think there can
physically,
be
what's
sort
the difference?
There's a continuum, and it's somewhat obvious because there are people who...
Is that to use your terminology? Is that
okay,
kind of
okay,
different,
but
or is that
that's,
a degree?
That's jumping outside the rules. You're changing your... Get a brain injury. That's very different than changing your opinions. Just changing your behavior.
Degree different or categorically different?
Yeah, categorically different. It's absolutely, like you're.
In what sense?
That's not within. That's not even what we're talking about. Like I'm talking like
point.
That
this
specific
is kind
case
of tangent.
Of a movie. That does not happen. You
okay,
have this
so
habit for
there's
years.
A really great book called Infidel, which is by a woman who is raised Muslim, who's raised to believe that if men saw her hair, they would rape her
right, it's
within
a,
3 minutes.
It's a,
right,
I'm
so
not
she goes to Amsterdam. She spends 2 weeks there. She realizes that that's not true, and her fundamental view of the world changes like that.
Right. No. No. No.
Forever.
It,
she does not change
feels,
back.
No. No. It feels like it changes like that, but it doesn't. It's a process. It
okay,
builds to that. It's no one changes overnight. It's a process.
I decided in one night that the people in Catholic school had been lying. In one night.
I feel like that, but it's not.
Okay, so
it's
there,
not the same thing.
You
had other evidence for a, I assume is a good period of time. To build to that point, and it felt like just a switch, but it's not
right,
just a switch. It's always a process.
You are acquiring a whole lot of knowledge,
right?
And then all of a sudden, you realize what that knowledge represents. So while you've been accruing the knowledge,
mm-hmm.
you have still been acting on a previous worldview,
mm-hmm.
and then when you recognize what that knowledge represents,
right,
that is when you change over.
Okay,
which can be a very abrupt change.
Okay. But it's not.
What about children? He's totally fine. They're schooling them, and he's made fun about his peers and his directors.
Whether or not this can happen on a personal level, can it happen on a community level?
Okay, so the point.
Does
that
new information radically change, sort of affect a phase transition, like the change from a liquid to a gas or what have you? In a group.
I think
yes,
it depends on how much that group believes in science and evidence. I mean, you could give the right wing all the evidence in the world that global warming is happening and they don't care. If you gave the left wing incontrovertible evidence that global warming is not happening, that would change that community.
It would, but I think the communities as groups of people change slower than people do anyway. Because it's notoriously difficult to convince a community of people about anything. Right, because because you can go to one person and say, well,
but
you know, here's incontrovertible evidence of global warming, and then that person goes to the community.
What I'm saying is that there are communities who believe universally in incontrovertible evidence.
Okay.
Well, but there.
But what does that have to do with the pace at which communities change?
Well, if they believe in that universally, and the incontrovertible evidence changes or suddenly becomes. In existence where it wasn't in existence
but
before?
Even in scientific communities, it takes a while for them to accept new evidence.
Yeah, you
even
still have to run your own experiments.
Right. There's nothing incontrovertible
never,
yeah.
in reality. Right. But
But I think when the community does change that fast, it tends to be very catastrophic.
Yeah.
I mean, for example, the Lily craze, or mass hysteria, like the Lily craze, when everyone suddenly got, for some bizarre reason in the 1890s, utterly obsessed with lilies. Thought the value of a lily shot absurdly high. People lost fortunes. To geek out for a minute, the absurdly inflated comic book prices of the 90s, where people were buying that. It's a useless piece of paper. It is a useless piece of paper. And people were buying them because it had a perceived value. And it happened like in a 2-year period that this happened. You look at witch crazes. Any time a vast change of someone's attitude happens, it tends, or not someone, we'll say, a community, it tends to be really catastrophic to that community because no one really knows how to react to it. If someone knows any positive examples of sudden dramatic changes, I would love, I need to hear it.
If I have a death in my family, I'm going to react in a certain way. When she goes to the Catholic school, she's going to react in a way that's uniquely her. Now, maybe over time, it's rapidly changing. The way that the DLD has a system of responsibility back is not going to be characteristic of an individual, but it's going to be characteristic of an individual. Nonetheless, the community can experience rapid change as an example of the thing exploding. The way that the United States responds to the thing exploding is very characteristic of what the U.S. tends to do. Because, I mean, it's fundamentally different than the way that Israel responded to the exploding. But it was nonetheless a very rapid change that did not make us deviate so much from our course on who we are.
This made us more red-blooded Americans.
But was that even a change? I mean, that's just something to react to. That doesn't necessarily change anything. What?
Fear kind of went through the roof.
Yeah, we got over it. We didn't change.
Well, I would.
I don't think everybody got over it.